And now, Virgin Most Powerful Radio is pleased to present Hands-On Apologetics with renowned Catholic author and apologist, Gary Machuda.
And welcome to Hands-On Apologetics. You have entered into Virgin Most Powerful's Apologetics Dojo. And I'm Gary Machuda, your host for this hour. And we got a great show in store for you today. And before I forget, everybody have a blessed feast of the Assumption of the Blessed Virgin Mary, where at the end of her earthly life was assumed body and soul into heaven. So we commemorate that today. And awesome feast of the church. And actually, from what I understand, I'm going to find out, was also a big stumbling block for our guest. Our guest for today is William Hemsworth. And William is a convert to the Catholic faith. In fact, he's a former Protestant seminary student. And actually, I don't want to give too much of his bio. One of the kisses of death, folks, if you're ever at a church and somebody's going to give a conversion story, don't be the one to introduce them, because you don't want to give the person's biography, because that's what he's going to talk about. So I'm going to leave that up to William. He's going to tell us this story about his journey into the Catholic Church. And that's going to be on the other side of the break. So that's always great. And also, by the way, he's an apologist. You know, he's got both guns blazing, and he's working in the field, in ministry, in media. And I also want to talk a little bit about that, too. So William Hemsworth is going to come on the other side of the break. And also, as always, we have our critical thinking skills section. And the finding of the fallacy for today is the appeal to emotion. Very common fallacy indeed. And a very uncommon meet the early church father for today. His name is Julian of Eclanium. So again, one of those obscure fathers, figures in church history. But nevertheless, that's what's so cool about that segment, is we get to find out about all these people, our forefathers in the faith, and what they're all about, what their life was about. And that way, we can use the early church fathers to explain and defend the faith and show that Catholicism is deeply rooted in the Christian history. All right, so without further ado, let me give my shout-outs to those, all our friends watching live stream on social media, namely Facebook and YouTube. Hello, everybody. Thank you, Elizabeth. First with the emoji explosion. Appreciate that. but it's always great for to see the chat room there, and also it's great for you listening on radio to join us. It's really cool. You know, I get to be part of the Virgin Most Powerful family and meet a lot of people that I probably would never have encountered had it not been for Jesse Romero and Terry Barber making the I guess good decision to have Hands-On Apologetics on the network. So anyway. It's great to be with you. And if you have any questions for William, give us a call at 888-526-2151. That is 888-526-2151. And also, if you don't want to come on the air, maybe you're a little mic shy, you could always send us an email to the Dojo mailbox. That is questions@handsonapologetics.com. It flies through the internet into my mailbox, which I do answer every email that's given me. And sometimes, folks, sometimes I even put it on the air. So keep them coming. Lots of great questions, great people sharing their life stories, what's going on as far as defending the faith. And I love to hear from it. And I think it also is great for the audience to hear as well. Because you're not alone, folks. If you're out there listening on the radio, a podcast, or watching a live stream, just know that you're not alone. You're not the only person out there defending the faith. The church is with you, and the church is praying for you. So keep up the good work. And I need to also mention this coming up very close. August 21st is just right around the corner. That's where we're going to do our live video on YouTube. I'm going to appear live along with Master Apologists John DeRosa and Pat Flynn. And we're going to talk about apologetics. It's going to be wall-to-wall apologetics. We're going to talk about where apologetics has come from, where it's headed, how best to explain, defend the faith, things to do, things not to do. And the three of us, John DeRosa, Pat Flynn, and myself, we're going to tackle all that. And it's, again, mark your calendars. It's August 21st. It's going to be 7 p.m. It's going to be a YouTube live event. And by the way, you can sign up and get a whole lot of freebies simply by going to handsonapologetics.com. That's one of my two websites. And just scroll down underneath the Hands On Apologetics banner. You'll see a white banner that says something to the effect that how would you like never to lose another religious argument again? Click on that. You'll get a sign-up sheet. You get a free ebook, and you also get an hour recording of the three of us defending the entire faith, from existence to God to Jesus, Messiah, and Lord, all the way to did Jesus establish the Catholic Church. That whole panorama, we actually finished recording those freebies yesterday. It was a lot of fun. It's packed with info. So you can get those, you can access those free just by signing up for the live event on August 21st. Again, go to Hands On Apologetics, click on that white banner that I was talking about, and sign up. And it's all free. All right, so without further ado, why don't we jump to our Finding the Fallacy for today? And the Finding the Fallacy is the appeal to emotion. The appeal to emotion is also an argument from passion. And it's a logical fallacy characterized by the manipulation of the recipient's emotions in order to win an argument, especially in the absence of factual evidence. And that's actually a pretty good definition of that. In other words, you don't have a lot of evidence to support your beliefs, so what do? Well, you start working on the affections of your audience. You start playing on their passions, their emotions, in order to make your side look more appealing rather than showing that your side has the better argument. And this is commonly done in apologetics. In fact, it's not unusual that you'll have somebody who will start off doing a defense of a particular position, and then right in the middle of it, they will start playing to the audience by giving these little sermonettes, if you will, about faith alone, or maybe the Inquisition, or, you know, whatever. And all that is designed to manipulate the audience into kind of pulling alongside them. And of course, the Inquisition and the, you know, the other stuff, faith alone, may not even be germane to the issue at hand. It's really just introduced into argument to manipulate the audience's emotion. Okay. So beware of that. And like I said, you know, many times with these logical fallacies, they kind of blend into each other. It could also be part of the appeal to fear. It could be an appeal to plain folks. There could be lots of other like sister arguments. But I think the appeal to emotion is kind of a blanket term that covers all of that. So just be aware of that. You know, if someone goes off track and tries to manipulate people, what you need to do is call them on point. Just say, look, I enjoy your sermon, but nevertheless, what about this? Okay, just refocus the question. All right, so let's move on to Meet the Early Church Father for today. And it's great. We have famous ones that everybody knows, even non-believers know. And then there's these obscure early church fathers. And I think today's early church father fits in the latter category. It is Julian of Eclanium, who died roughly around AD 454. And around that time, Pope Zosimus proclamated his decision against Pelagianism in 418 in a letter that went out to all the bishops of the world requiring their assent in the matter. Now, what's Pelagianism? Pelagianism is the belief that essentially... that there's really no original sin, that Adam and Eve left us a bad example, and that we can kind of save ourselves through our own natural goodness. Okay. So the Pope issues this letter condemning Pelagianism, and he requires all the bishops of the world to assent to the letter. Julian, Bishop of Eclanium, headed a group of 18 bishops who refused to sign. And from that time, he assumed leadership of the Pelagian party. He was expelled from his see by Pope Zosimus and in exile, and also he was exiled by civil authorities as well. With no permanent domicile, he found himself about the year 420 enjoying the hospitality of Theodore of Mopsuestia. And in the late 420s, he tarried for a long time with Nestorius in Constantinople. And folks, by the way, we mentioned this in previous broadcasts. It's sometimes these heirs of the church kind of have similar ideas. And Pelagianism, this idea that you can be saved apart from grace, just on your own natural goodness, your own human will, unaided human will, is very similar to Nestorianism. Because when they looked at Christ, Nestorius kind of separated Jesus into two persons, a human person and a divine person. And in that view of Jesus, they viewed almost like the human Jesus by his own merit, by his own natural powers, merited union with the divine Jesus. So it's kind of like they saw Jesus under the auspices of Pelagianism. So the two heresies kind of go hand in hand. And that's why our early church father for today, Julian of Eclanium, runs to the to hang out with the Nestorians in Constantinople. I think that's about it. That's a good summary of his life. Coming up on the other side of the break, we're going to be talking with Master Apologist William Hemsworth on his journey to Catholicism. Don't want to miss it, folks. Stay tuned. You listen to Hands on Apologetics. I'm Gary Machuda. Be right back.
This is Terry Barber reminding you, there's a women's conference coming up September 7th, 2019 at the Sacred Heart Chapel. Mary Danielle Barber will be speaking along with Barbara Nicolosi. They're going to be talking about true femininity, be who you are. This is going to be for your daughters, your mothers. Every woman should be at this conference. And the way to do it is go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151.
In Luke 7, Jesus said, "I tell you, her many sins have been forgiven her, because she has been shown great love." According to St. John of the Cross, Christians should always remember that the value of their good works is not based on number and excellence. Their value is based on the love for God that prompts them to do the works. May we always be motivated by true love for God, and not worry so much about what we do, but why we do it.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
And welcome back, everybody, to Hands-On Apologetics. And, on the show, we frequently look at conversion stories and try to view the church from outside. And we learn a lot about wrestling with doctrines and stuff so that we can refine our abilities to share and explain the faith and make it easier for our separated brethren come into the church and to share his story. We have William Hemsworth. William's a former ordained Baptist and Lutheran who converted to Catholicism while at seminary. He's the husband and father of four, who is passionate about passing the faith on. He assists in teaching adults and children. And also, he's a popular blogger, author, and podcaster. So, William Hemsworth, welcome to Hands on Apologetics. Richard, I don't hear the audio. Hold on. Heard something. William, are you there? Yay! Welcome to Hands on Apologetics. You know, media, you know, you have that. But
Chris or Liam has some relation, so don't be...
You know, I Googled your name, and yep, that was the first hit. It started correcting me. So what I did was I put Catholic at the end, and then Catholic at the end, and then all of a sudden you...
good to know. good to know.
Yeah. So, YouTube channel, and, you know, and, well, you introduced me to your case story, What led you into the Catholic Church? What were the objections? That type of thing. So where did you start off?
Well, I started off, I grew up in the Los Angeles area in a city called La Puente, California. It's about 20 miles east of LA, right next to Covina, where, you know, where, the studio for Virgin Most Powerful is.
Oh, wow.
I started taking my sister and I to church when I believe I was 12, at the street called Sunset Wesleyan Church.
Okay.
So that's where I first started. Pastor Gene Jesus, and it was infectious there. And Pastor Gene took me under his wing before he passed away. He passed away of a mass, maybe a year after I met him, but he would all at the food court and like, okay, why? This seems a little strange, but he would just sit there talking to people about the mass spec, became very, ingrained.
Wow, that's beautiful. Yeah, so you just go out in the mall and just talk to people about Jesus.
He would sit there at a table. He would just like normal everyday conversation. Mm-hmm. And he would just, he'd introduce himself as a pastor of this church. And do you have any questions about Christianity? And sometimes people would sit down and just let listen. He would just pray for people and just be there to listen in that setting. In 93, malls were very, very popular back then. Not like today. There was no online shopping. So everyone was there.
Diverse. Imagine at the mall.
At times. Like I said, he passed away, unfortunately. He passed away, unfortunately, and there was something like 800 or 900 people at his funeral.
Wow.
It was huge. Pastor Le, who I'm still friends with, we chat on Facebook every now and then. He kind of carried that on. He was always there just to listen, explain. But as I got older, I started having more questions that just seemed to not really get answered. You know, I was president of the youth group. I was member of campus life in high school. We went to the youth camps. We went to youth conferences. And it just started getting more and more questions like, why do we do these things? Why do we believe this? Why do we believe X? One example that sticks out is once saved, always saved. That's, you know, we were told once you're saved, you're done. It's finished. Period. End of story.
Yeah.
And then at a youth camp one year, I think I was 17. We were studying through Hebrews, and then somehow we skipped over Hebrews chapter 6. So I went back to the room that night, read Hebrews chapter 6, started reading about, you know, how it's impossible that once you've, you know, you're better off if you never came to Christ, if you believe and then not believe. I was like, well, this doesn't make sense. Once saved, always saved. And so I didn't ask questions about that. I just kind of, that just stayed in my mind. I was like, okay, this, I need to try to rationalize this somehow. Mm-hmm. I graduated from high school and I joined the Army. I became a chaplain assistant in the Army, okay, which was a great experience. You know, I got to work with all types of faith traditions, from Wiccans, Muslims, Catholics, Orthodox, every type of Protestant you can think of. So I got that education at a young age. I was 18 when I joined the Army. It was right out of high school.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. These questions, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going, what part of the Army?
I was a chaplain assistant. It's part of the chaplain corps.
Okay.
So you're not an ordained minister in the field, but you're assisting the, you're assigned chaplain in his ministry to the different faiths.
Gotcha.
So you have to coordinate, like if you're the Protestant chaplain, but you have Catholic soldiers, you have to make sure they get the care they need. And so it was an education, a basic education in different beliefs of Christianity and different world religions, okay, which I think helped me along this path quite a bit.
Yeah.
And
yeah. Talk about firsthand knowledge about, you know, all these different world religions, beliefs. You interacted with it day to day. You know, it wasn't just book knowledge.
Right. Exactly. It wasn't just book knowledge. It was something that we were immersed in. But where the Catholic Church comes in is I came into the chaplain assistant field, you know, thinking that, you know, the standard Catholic stereotypes, you know, they don't read the Bible. They don't do, you know, the priests don't preach. They don't do any of this. They just kind of do their thing. I've never actually been to a mass at this point.
Hmm.
So I get assigned to Georgia. I was in Fort Stewart, Georgia. I was later stationed at Hunt Army Airfield in Savannah. First Sunday there, I had to assist, not on the altar, but I had to help the chaplain set up for mass. And part of that is manning the sound system. And so I'm up in the mezzanine, and for the first time, I'm participating, well, not participating, but I'm listening to a mass. And so I hear the first reading. I'm like, okay, well, there's a reading from the Old Testament. There probably won't be much after that. Then there's a second reading. I was like, oh, okay, interesting. And then there's a gospel reading from the Gospel of Mark. And I forget which chapter and verse. I was like, okay, but now it's going to end. Because, you know, the Bible readings are done. It's going to end. I had no idea what was going to go on.
Yeah.
The priest at the time proceeded to give this 35-minute homily on the gospel reading that day. And it just blew my mind. totally shattered my misconceptions. And so I think that moment was as I look back on this journey, that was one of those pivotal moments. And I asked him, like, sir, do you always preach like that? He's like, yeah. I mean, we Catholics, we love the Bible. We gave the world the Bible. And I was like, what do you mean you gave the world the Bible? And he's like, I'll talk to you about it another time. I have to go to this other mass. And so we never got back to that discussion because he got transferred pretty immediately. Like, he was gone in a week. He didn't even know it. Because there was an emergency and he had to deploy elsewhere. Mm-hmm. But that was my first experience with the mass.
Wow. So that was kind of square peg round hole, huh? From your expectations.
It was.
Wow. They actually read scripture and preach from it.
Yes, it was. And like I said, I had heard all those standard objections from, you know, friends in high school who considered themselves former Catholics and all that. So that was my experience. I was like, well, if they left, then this must be true. And
yeah,
well, no, they do read the Bible. The priest was encouraging the people to read the Bible. So there was that misconception kind of shattered. And he preached from it in a very passionate way to where people were visibly moved by it to change something they were doing.
Yeah.
Now, like I said, that was a key thing for me. Now, as I would go through this journey, I was in the Army for 6.5 years. And later on, I would come across, when I got stationed in Arizona, which is where I live now, I met another chaplain. He's a retired Air Force chaplain, but he's a contract priest, Father Castigar. He lives in Chicago now. He's about 98 years old, and he's still going.
Wow.
But I would talk to him. Just, you know, why do you believe this? Why do you believe this? Is the Eucharist symbolic like I believe? And he would say no. And here's the Bible verses why. I was like, okay, that's a good answer, but I think maybe it's being misinterpreted somehow. You know, standard Protestant thought there. So he planted that seed as well. And I would just ask questions. I'd attend the masses. I'd stay as long as I could before I had to assist with other duties in the military. Mm-hmm. And slowly but surely, things just started lining up. And so when I met my fiance, who's my fiance at the time, who's my wife now, I told her one day, I want to go to RCA and just learn more. And so she's thrilled. She's like, this is fantastic. This is great. We can get married in the church and all this. He's going to come in. So I went to RCIA, had a lot of questions answered. But at the end of it, I still had this thought that the Eucharist was symbolic. And I still had issues with some of the Marian dogmas, which we'll get to in a little bit, especially with today being the Feast of the Assumption.
Right.
But we had a little issue. I couldn't proceed. The Holy Spirit was preventing me from entering the church with that thought because I had a divorce prior to meeting my wife. So I had to go through the whole annulment thing. So it was a blessing in disguise, really. So we're going through the RCIA process. I'm getting these questions answered. All my misconceptions are going away. And I had to wait this period, I think it was 13 months for the annulment to go through. Okay. And so I'm studying. And like I said, answers, I'm just getting answers.
Very good. Well, why don't we hold it right there? We're coming up on the break. We're talking with William Hemsworth about his journey of faith. Listen to Hands On Apologetics. We'll be right back right after the break.
Hi, this is Barbara Nicolosi, and we're having a women's conference here at the Sacred Heart Chapel in Covina on September 7th, 2019. This is going to be a great, great day for you to come and meet a bunch of new friends, wonderful Catholic women who want to deepen their Catholic faith and their understanding of themselves as women. You know, this era right now that we're in, so much confusion. What is it to be a man? What is it to be a woman? You know, the Catholic Church has a lot to say about this, and we're going to hear about them. We're going to hear about John Paul II's letter on women that he wrote from Mary Danielle Barber. She's going to talk about that. She's going to talk about Mary as a model for all of us. It's a topic that we can never reflect on too much. I'm going to talk about Teresa of Avila and the interior castle and how a mystical marriage is what all of us should be called to, or are called to, as Catholics in our prayer lives, and especially as women in the church. Aileen Blakowski is going to talk about motherhood and homeschooling. And then finally, we have Father Charles Murray. He's going to be the celebrant of the Eucharist. He's going to be here hearing confessions. It's going to be an amazing day. We're going to have an hour of adoration together, time to pray, time to laugh, to eat, reflect, grow in our passion for our Catholic faith and our identity as Catholic women. You don't want to miss it. You want to come. You want to bring your friends. You want to bring your daughters, your nieces. That's really an affordable day. So go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org and you can register for this conference or call 877-526-2151. The Women's Conference is going to be a great event for the Archdiocese of Los Angeles area, Southern California Catholics. You don't want to miss it.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show. and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
This is Jesse Romero. You're listening to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda on Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
And welcome back, everybody. We are chatting with William Hemsworth about his journey of faith into the Catholic Church. And William, right before the break, you mentioned that you entered into RCIA. I'm just curious, you know, going into it, was it with the attitude of I'm not really going to go through with coming into the church, but I'm willing to listen to the other side, or were you really open to possibly becoming Catholic?
My story gets, I don't want to say interesting. It takes a strange turn as I wanted to learn more, but I was trying to really, for all intents and purposes, I was entering the church to make my fiance and my mother-in-law happy,
okay.
Or a future mother-in-law happy.
Yeah.
I don't recommend that to anyone. it not only is it very difficult on you, but it's heartbreaking to the ones you love the most. And you're kind of, and really you're kind of making a mockery of the process.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I came into the church later on. I came into the church officially at the vigil in 2007. Like I said, I did it for the wrong reasons. Mm-hmm. I wasn't on board 100% with everything.
Okay.
Which led me into eventually pretty much leaving, you know, getting ordained as a Lutheran, going into seminary at Liberty. And while I was at Liberty, I was like, I'm going to study church history. That way I could prove that the church is not the early church. Yeah, well, I'm here now. So, obviously, that was not a good move.
well, tell us a little bit about that. I mean, that's interesting that you felt the call to become an ordained pastor in Lutheran Church. What which branch? Missouri Synod? What's ELC?
Well, and that's the thing. For a lot of people don't know, there's actually about 44 different denominations of the Lutheran Church.
Yeah,
And the branch that I became a ordained minister in was actually called the LEPC. They're based out of South Carolina.
Oh, okay. I haven't heard that one.
So they're very small. They're very regional. And like I said, it's kind of strange how this move happened. It was it's an act of pride. Anyway, I started studying church history. And the first assignment I had to do was read the readings of St. Justin Martyr. Mm-hmm. And in there, I'm reading. Then all of a sudden, I come to his description of the Mass. I was like, whoa, okay. Well, here we go. As I'm studying that description of the Mass, I was still going to Mass with my wife because going to the same church to me is very important. It always has been. Just for family unity. And so I'm saying everything, as I'm at Mass with my wife, I'm like, look, everything that Justin Martyr has described is happening right now. And this happened like in the 100s. And so as I studied more, I'm reading the writings of St. Irenaeus, St. Ignatius of Antioch, how they're talking about the Eucharist is the body and blood of Jesus. And I was like, oh my gosh, I have made a big mistake here. But, and because of those writings and descriptions of it from scripture, I was like, okay, I believe that the Eucharist is what it says it is now. I totally get that. But I still have this issue of the Marian dogmas. Because I couldn't fathom them. I had a lot of doubts about them. And I think it was Kimberly Hahn who said she had three main objections coming into the church, you know, Mary, Mary, and Mary.
Yeah.
That's kind of where I was at this point now that the Eucharist domino had fallen. Like I knew that Jesus was present in the Eucharist. I understood that now. But now I have the Marian dogmas to deal with. And again, through my studies of reading church history, in the course of my degree program. Now I came that, okay, perpetual virginity. That was believed very early on. I see that in these writings. Mary as new Eve. I see that in St. Irenaeus.
Right.
Okay. Now, how about the assumption? That was the struggle, which is kind of ironic why we're sitting here today on the 15th of August.
Talk about divine providence, huh?
That didn't hit me until this morning. I was like, oh my goodness, the final domino to fall is we're going to talk about it today. It's awesome.
Yeah. Praise be to God.
Amen. So I'm studying this subject. I'm reading different books about it. I came in contact with the Coming Home Network. I'm like, I have this last question I need answered. Help me. And they sent me a bunch of materials, all for free. Great ministry. Check them out. And they chatted with me about it, answered my questions about it. And then I come across this talk by Scott Hahn where he talks about the assumption. And I was like, oh my goodness. I had my face in awe. This feeling of awe come over me like, it's true.
Wow.
It's absolutely true. And I woke and I kept that feeling to myself, but I woke up at 2 a.m. It was a Saturday morning. And I told my wife, I'm like, it's true. I'm sorry for everything I've put you through. It's true. I'm going to confession today. And like I left. So she's like, just go back to bed. You know, it's 2 a.m. And so she wakes up. It was like 8:00 a.m. And she's like, you know, I had a dream that you told me that this is true. I'm like, that wasn't a dream. That happened. I'm going to confession today. And she just started crying. She's like, I've been praying for this day. My mom has been praying. I just want us to be happy family together, sitting in church. And, you know, from there, I've just felt that call, if you will, just to tell people about the truth that the church has, the truth that the church has always had, almost in every medium possible that I can get my hands on. Yeah. So it's kind of where we're at today.
Yeah. That's beautiful. Yeah. I'm just, could you share, what was it that, do you think, is there a key idea about the assumption of Mary that kind of unlocked the door? Was a key concept maybe that Scott Hahn mentioned? Or was it just the whole thing together?
I had it in my mind that somehow the assumption was her power going to heaven, which is totally false.
Right.
Once I realized from this video that this was the power of God raising his mother to heaven, yeah, I was like, okay, but somehow it clicked. I had heard the argument before, but somehow it clicked that day. It's hard to explain. It just clicked. And like, I had this feeling of peace come over me like, okay, I understand. And then another concept that I had heard was that I for some reason never thought about is look at all the relics throughout the history of the church. Mm-hmm. If Mary's tomb would have been somewhere, there would have been this huge cathedral built over him somewhere, but that is not around. I was like, okay. At that time I was like, yeah, okay, I guess it makes sense, but I'm going to put that on the back burner.
Right.
And then I started searching for, you know, bodily relics of Mary, and there's none. I'm like, okay, that makes total sense. And then just with that concept of, you know, it was the power of Christ who assumed Mary up and not Mary's power, somehow just all clicked that day at one time.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, just a singular act of grace, you know, just, you know, God was planting seeds all around, and then it was that moment where it all comes together, and you end up waking your wife up at 2 a.m.
Right.
So, yeah, I think it's true. It's all true. Yeah, that's beautiful. So while you're going to Liberty and that, were you working part-time? I mean, obviously you couldn't. Did you go full-time, part-time?
It was online. So I was still working full-time and going online full-time.
Okay.
So I've worked at a bank since 2005. Mm-hmm. Doing financial stuff. And ever since, like I said, ever since I was a teenager, you know, joining the Army to be a chaplain assistant, I felt this pulling to teach the faith somewhere, somehow. Always had that. It's never gone away, even though I tried to suppress it a lot of times.
Yeah.
So I had the flexibility at liberty to do it online. And I also had some professors challenge me in my assumptions of what the church taught as well, which is very ironic coming from a Baptist school, but they said, is this really true? You may want to research this. Kind of telling me in a roundabout way, they didn't want to come out and say that, you know, what you're thinking is wrong, but at the same time, they're telling me what you're thinking is wrong.
Right.
I had a professor do that with the assumption as well, because I had started writing this paper about how the assumption wasn't true. And he's like, you may want to check this out. And he would send me little links here and there.
Yeah.
And so I scrapped that paper. Like I said, God was planting all these little seeds along the way.
Yeah.
And I was, in some cases, flat out ignoring them out of pride. But those, like Cardinal Newman says, those seeds grew into oak trees later on and aha moments for me.
Yeah. Yeah, boy, that's amazing. Yeah, the only reason I brought that up was, you know, sometimes people have a flash and they know the church is true. And then if they're thinking of getting into being a pastor or something, then that just changes their whole, you know, where am I going? How am I going to feed my kids? You know, how am I going to get an income? But thanks be to God, like you were able to do this where, you know, it didn't affect your livelihood.
Right. I'm very thankful. And I'm very thankful for that. Cause I have four kids now. I can't even imagine what that process would be. And my heart goes out to those who come to the realization that the church is true. You know, and they have children, they have wives, mortgages, car payments. And that's just the extra stressor on them. Like, okay, now I'm losing my sole means of providing. Like, what do I do?
Yeah.
I'm really thankful I didn't have to go through that. And my heart goes out to those that do.
Yeah. Yeah. Boy. And we're thankful that he got that grace to, you know, come back to church. And you know, it's a good thing you scrapped that paper against the assumption, because that would have been one more thing you'd have to confess.
Yes.
You're reconciled exactly. With the church.
And I'm thankful for that professor who was like, yeah, this is actually not a new teaching. It was taught. I forget the link. Unfortunately, I have to go back in my email at Liberty, because I still have access to it. It's several years old, but he sent me a link. Because basically my thesis at the point was like, this was a new thing. It only came about in, you know, 1950.
Yeah, right.
And totally false.
Very good. Well, on the other side of the break, I want to talk to you a little bit about your ministry. We're talking with William Hemsworth about his journey into the faith and also being an apologist. Stay tuned.
Welcome, Daniel. You're on the line. What's on your mind, brother?
Hi, I just wanted to share a testimony about Virgin Most Powerful Radio. I had a buddy at work who, you know, he's a lukewarm Catholic guy, and I wanted him to start listening to the Terry and Jesse show, so I kept telling him to download the app, and he kept putting me off. So one day, I grabbed his phone, and I downloaded the app for him. I went on vacation, and you know, I kept telling him to listen to it. He was kind of put me off. I came back from vacation. He comes to my cubicle, and he says to me, hey, man, I've been listening to Terry and Jesse's show, and it's great. And it's made a big impact in his life. The guy, he's going to weekly adoration a couple times a week. He goes to the mass in the morning. Mm-hmm. He's an on-fire Catholic, and he promotes the Terry and Jesse show and the Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Wow. Daniel, what a testimony. And I want to encourage our listeners to get those cards by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org and do what Daniel's doing. Go out and spread the faith by inviting people to listen to Virgin Most Powerful. Daniel, thanks for your testimony, brother. God love you.
You're welcome.
This is Terry Barber reminding you there's a women's conference coming up September 7th, 2019 at the Sacred Heart Chapel. Mary Danielle Barber will be speaking along with Barbara Nicolosi. They're going to be talking about true femininity. Be who you are. This is going to be for your daughters, your mothers. Every woman should be at this conference. And the way to do it is go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151.
buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
And welcome back, everybody. We are talking with Master Apologist William Hemsworth about his journey of faith. And boy, William, you felt the call to ministry. You felt the call to educating people about Jesus. And man, you have put this, once you came into the church, you've been gangbusters. For example, you've written a few books. Why don't we talk a little bit about the books?
So the books, it's funny how they come about. I'd say a lot of them are probably booklets more than anything, just trying to do for little things to spread the faith. I have one just about the Eucharist. Is it the true body and blood of Christ or a symbol? And I go through the biblical evidence, the historical evidence, church tradition about that. Mm-hmm. A couple of devotional books, and a couple of them are just collections of essays as well, just to help people build on their faith, to live the Christian life in a deeper way, and to evangelize. We're all called to evangelize. It's not just the job of our priest or anything. It's all of our jobs. And I'm trying to get that message out as best I can.
Yeah. Yeah. They look like great titles. You have a Life of Christ, Essays on the Christian Life, Church History, Theology. I also see you have Biblical Foundation for the Catholic Faith, Volume 1. What's that about?
That's just a collection of biblical quotes that substantiate Catholic doctrine. Now, for full disclosure, those Bible quotes in there are King James Version, and the reason for that is because it's public domain.
Yeah,
because it's just it's Bible quotes. So it's just one volume. I'm working on volume two right now, which covers the Eucharist, some of the Marian stuff, different papal infallibility, things like that. Mm-hmm. It's just, like I said, that book is just purely Bible quotes. It's chapter, verse, just to help people say. It's kind of a quick primer just to say, hey, okay, these are the scriptures that back this up. These are the scriptures that back that up. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to give people a resource on that.
Yeah. Well, you live in Texas. Is that correct?
I live in Arizona. I live in Tucson, Arizona.
Arizona. Okay. Yeah. So I imagine you have fundamentalists there. I mean, the King James Bible quotes certainly wouldn't be a loss on them.
That was one reason why, is because I always, that's a common theme. Mm-hmm. There's some fundamentalist churches around here. The Southern Baptist Church is actually planting a lot of churches around here as well. So they're not into the King James as much as the fundamentalists are. But every now and then I have a couple come to the door and I've given them a copy of that and their minds are like, whoa, what is this? I'm like, look, it's King James Version in here about what we believe and why. And they run off. But And that's never the intention. I always try to invite people in so we could have a discussion,
right?
Among Christian brothers, just to dispel some of those myths out there that maybe they've been taught. Because a lot of the fundamentalists in the churches here were in the Catholic Church and they were drawn out for some reason. So I just want to have a conversation with them on what the church really believes, maybe what they believe the church to teach, and maybe help them see the lie a little bit. Ultimately, it's all up to the Holy Spirit, but hopefully I get through to some.
Yeah, very good. And okay, also, your YouTube and podcast ministry, too. How did that come about?
The podcast ministry started coming about while I was at, let me see. It started coming about a couple of years ago, and it's gone through a couple incarnations. Initially, the podcast was more about Christianity in general. It was more of an ecumenical thing. Mm-hmm. And then slowly but surely, I just, the Holy Spirit's like, you need to do a Catholic one. You need to talk about your struggles. You need to talk about some of the things that led you in. And so that's where the Bible Catholic was born. And yeah. So the YouTube channel is still Bible Catholic. The Bible Catholic podcast is still available, even though I haven't created new content for it, because I'm working on a new one now called Know the Faith, Defend the Faith, where I still have some of the same material, but I'm interviewing other people from across the country, you know, their conversion stories, some of their struggles, coming into the church. So I'm trying to do more of that now. It's grown quite a bit from, I think it was 2016 where I started it to now. Because in 2016, I was like, I'll get a show at what I can, which would be like once every couple months or whatever. And now it's like, here, once a week, here we go. Now it's on Breadbox Media. I'm blessed for the show to be on there as well. Nice. And getting a lot of great response. I'm getting emails from people saying, you know, how something I've said and gone through has helped them in some way. And it's really humbling, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful. So it's kind of evolving. You know, you wanted to continue ministry, and then, you know, writing, and then podcast. And now, like you said, now you're kind of heading in a different direction. Lots of good fruit. And my question is, now, usually people get, you know, they're gangbusters. They're hit by God's grace. They want to share, defend the faith, and they're on fire. And then you go to your local parish, and they look at you like, where's this guy from? You know, is he from Mars? He's so excited about the faith. What was the reaction, by the way, in the parish? Did you start doing things within your parish?
Yes. I teach elementary religious education. I taught first grade for a few years. I taught my daughter's first communion class last year. This year I'm teaching my son's sixth grade class. And I also assist with RCIA and other, you know, and some friends and I, we did a catechism in a year class last year.
Wow.
The reaction of the parish was so supportive. I got plugged in right away. They didn't know the full story up until, you know, I kind of stayed on the down low, if you will. I was like, I want to help teach kids. So I started off teaching first grade, fell in love with it. I saw how those kids grew, how they grew in their faith in that 1 year. How they helped me grow in that 1 year, more important, you know, also.
Right.
And I just started getting more involved. So taught again. Then started getting involved with the adults, you know, having deeper conversations, you know, some with morality and other issues people struggle with. And they've just been so supportive. Big family, they're helping me in any way possible. The director of religious education for the elementary side, consider her a mentor, along with her husband, who's a deacon. They've just been phenomenal. They challenge me. They give me tips on writing, on speaking, on resources, just everything like that. It's such a blessing.
Yeah. And I think that's the right way to renewing your parish too. I know some people, you know, they want to step in, start pushing people around, redesigning things, and then they run into a lot of opposition. But starting off and just building street cred, you know, just like you said, with children's education and stuff, you start building relationships and you start building, you know, mutual respect. And I think that has a much bigger impact on a parish than, you know, kind of a top-down approach. Like, I'm going to talk to Father and tell him that he needs to do A, B, C, and D, you know.
Which will not work.
Right.
But thankfully, my parish, St. Francis de Sales here in Tucson, a lot of us in the education, I can think of like three or four that are converts.
Wow.
And we're just all supportive. And one of them teaches... One of them, her name is Kristen, and she's just amazing. She's teaching every book of the Bible on Monday nights. She's starting Revelation next week. She has gone all the way from Genesis all the way through in about 2 years.
Wow.
And her classes have like 40 or 50 people in them. And people are just learning about scripture. They're learning about the traditions of the church. Beautiful. They're being renewed and they're going out, they're bringing people in. It's great. God's moving. That's all I can say.
Yeah. Yeah. So, the Tucson Apologetics, program that you started, is that just a name for what you're doing in your ministry, or is there an actual organization that, meetings and things like that?
That's kind of a funny story. Eventually there will be meetings and all that.
Okay.
And actually this kind of spawned by me reading Brandon Vaught's book, why I'm Catholic and you should be too.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Because I read a stat in there saying for every one person who comes into the church, there are 6.45 who leave because they don't understand something.
Yeah.
And so I was like, wow, Lord, like what can I do to help with this? And so I started, having these seeds planted with the Tucson Institute. And so right now it's starting with articles, the podcast. Mm-hmm. I'll be going to Jeff Caven's conference in Garden Grove in September as a member of the press covering that. So that'll be on my channel and all that as well. Eventually it's going to be, some online courses. It's going to be, the goal is to have a weekly meetup. If they wanted, a certificate program. And if people want me to go to their parish just to talk about a certain subject, that'll be available as well. And I'm not asking any money for it, as long if it's within the Tucson area or within 2 hours of Tucson. Mm-hmm. I'll just go there. We'll talk about the faith, answer some objections about the faith. That's the goal of it, is to eliminate that cost barrier for people to learn about the faith and just, okay, here it is. It may not be the best presentation because, it's just me funding it with my bank salary as a single income household. But, it's going to be here. I'm going to point to free resources that people can have. I'm going to give some free resources. The St. Paul evangelization, the local chapter has reached out to help support that as well. So I'm about starting a team here in Tucson because Tucson doesn't have a team. Uh-huh. And they said I can use some of their material as well. So we're discerning that right now, but yeah. So there is there is organization to it. It's more than just an article and podcast. There will be more in the future. At some point, probably starting in January is what I'm headed for.
Awesome. Wow. That's exciting. So again, where can people go to get your material?
So you can go to williamhemsworth.com. You can also go to tucsonapologetics.org as well. There's articles, the williamhemsworth.com. There's the Bible Catholic show there. There are the YouTube channels there. There's links to the books. If you want some of the books, just email me. I'll email them over to you. I try to do it as for little cost as possible. I don't want that to be a barrier to people understanding the faith and to sharing the faith.
Yeah, very good. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Gary. It's an honor to be on here.
Well, it's great to have you again. WilliamHemsworth.com. Go to it. Check it out, folks. Support it because this is exciting. This is, grassroots apologetics. Oh, boy. I can't believe the hour has flown. It's time for me to shut down the Midwest Command Center here, turn off the dojo lights. Tomorrow we're going to have Paul Thomas coming on about raising children to be apologists. Coming up next, High Impact Catholic Talk with Terry and Jessica. God willing, we'll be back again tomorrow to talk about apologetics. Take care.
In the 1990s, I lived and worked in Hollywood. But when my wife Betty's mom took ill, we relocated to Orange County. And it was during this time in our lives that I converted to Catholicism. Once my eyes were opened to the truth, I couldn't learn enough about the faith. But I had less free time than ever, especially with a long commute. That's when I discovered the real value of Catholic audio. Listening to cassette tapes transformed my daily commute into a miniature retreat. And that's the beauty of Virgin Most Powerful Radio today. Since the podcasts are archived, you can listen anytime on our smartphone app. I know how listening to Catholic audio can bring you closer to Christ and His Church. So I encourage you to visit the App Store or go to vmpr.org and download the app today. It just might change your life. I'm Matthew Arnold for Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Virgin Most Powerful Radio, sharing the gospel with clarity and charity.